Last time we talked about the Gemara, and we developed kind of one pole of the argument of Harsha, and that was the position of the Baal Hamar. Right, so the primary question we have in the Sugya is, the Gemara is telling us that you can empower somebody to act as your agent to collect your stuff for you, right? Unclear what that stuff is, but you can empower an agent to collect your stuff for you. The question is, are you doing this as a shliach, or are you doing right, or are you doing this as an owner of the object, right? What gives you the rights to be collecting? The problem with saying this guy is an owner is, what do we do with the whole sugya of Rabbi Yochanan, who said that you cannot transfer ownership to something that's not in your possession, right? So if you have, let's say, a loan, right, you lend someone money, we know milva lahotza nitna, it's not in your possession. If you wanted to do kiddushin with it, you could not do so. So how could I transfer possession of the loan to the morsha, right, to my agent, the guy who I'm giving the harsha to, if the loan is not in my possession? Right, we saw the implication of the Gemara all the way until the very end strongly implied that, in fact, there is a transfer of ownership going on here, right? The best part of the best line, two of those, right? The two best examples of those were when Nehar Dai told us that you must write zil dun v'zachi v'apik l'nafshach, right? Go judge and acquire the object for yourself, because if you do not write this, then the person holding on to the money can say lav bal dvarim yidia, right? You're a random interloper. You don't have standing, you don't have judicial standing in the case, right? So seemingly, once you make him an owner, now he has judicial standing, right? Because he can say, I am relevant, I'm not a random person, I'm an owner of the object. And the second one was the position of a Maimar, who said that the Morsha, if he wants, can turn around, right? He can backstab his employer, right? He can like a twist at the end. He can after winning the object from the borrower, he can hold on to it for himself, right? He can toe face for himself, which clearly seems to imply that he has legal ownership rights to the object, and that's what's allowing him to do tfisa. The third major implication that there's ownership going on here was in our Gemara. That was the Gemara in Shavuos, where the Gemara said, right, there's a halacha, if you know testimony, then you must give it. Right, that's if you fail to do so, and if you're called on to testify, and you falsely swear that you do not know the testimony, that's one of the cases which the Chumash HaMayikra says has to bring the carbon ola b'yorid. Right, depending on your wealth, either a couple of birds or an animal. But the question is, who is able to force you to swear, right, that you know no testimony, which will be machayev you a carbon? So the Gemara the Mishnah in Shavuos talks about a case where someone says to the witnesses, swear that Reuven owes Shimon money, and the Gemara says, well, how can you have a carbon shvua from the demand, swear that Reuven owes Shimon money? We have halacha that there's only a karban shvua when the demand for testimony comes mi pi hatoveya, right? That the actual litigant has to be the one demanding testimony. So how can we have a third party demanding testimony and creating a chi of karban shvua? It has to be mi pi hatoveya. And the Gemara answers, right, that we're dealing with a case of harsha'a, right? That the actual litigant hired a morsha, right? He hired the agent, who then goes and demands testimony from the edim. And so apparently, being a morsha is a sufficient status to be considered mi pi hatoveya, right? It's as if you were actually the litigant yourself. And the easiest way to understand that is if the morsha becomes an owner of the object, right? And that's why it's going to be mi pi hatoveya. So those are the three main proofs just from the Gemara that we should think of harsha as a real transfer of ownership. On the other hand, right, the two factors militating in the other direction, number one is the way that our Gemara concludes. Right? Our Gemara concludes with Rav Ashi saying that hilchasa shlicha shavye, right, that the Rav Ashi says explicitly that a morsha is a shliach, and the nafka mina is Rav Ashi disagrees with the Maimar whether the morsha is allowed to do tfisa or not. Right, Rav Ashi says that the morsha cannot seize the object for himself. After all, he is only the shliach of the owner, which indicates that he does not possess any ownership rights of his own. And the second factor, which would support the position that this is only a shliach, is the fact that otherwise, what do we do with Rabbi Yochanan, right? How can you have a transfer of ownership of something which is not currently in the possession of the current owner? Okay, so the Baal Hamar took a very strong position that what's going on is pure shlichas, right? And he says what seems to be a problem for him, the fact that 90% of the Gemara in our sugya implies bialus, and then all of a sudden at the very end we have Rav Ashi say shlichus, right? So Baal Hamar says, like, that's the exact point, right? That the Gemara had been assuming bialus, and then we change our whole conception of harsha at the very end of the sugya. So the reason why it seems like Rav Ashi contradicts the entire preceding Shaklavataria is because Rav Ashi does contradict the entire preceding Shaklavataria, right? Rav Ashi has a revolutionary new position as to what harsha is, and since Rav Ashi, right, we know Hilchasa Kibasrai, we always paskin like the, or normally we paskin like the last amor to speak, and that's often Rav Ashi. So, right, and the Gemara explicitly said Hilchasa, right, Hilchasa Shlichashavi, the Hilchasa like Rav Ashi, the Mursha is considered a Shliach. So the Baal Hamar says, therefore, you don't need to actually write in your harsha'a document, zil dun v'zachi bapit v'nafshach. You don't need to write in there, go acquire it for me, because we rejected that part of the Gemara. We don't need to worry about how to fit harsha'a with Rabbi Yochanan, because there's no kinyan going on here. It's a totally different institution. And the other great thing that this does with Baal Hamar is, right, there's clearly a historical aspect going on here, right? This is explicit in the beginning of our Tosos, which is that people were writing harshas on objects in which you can never transfer ownership. Setting aside Rabbi Yochanan, there are certain things that you can't transfer ownership of. If you have a milva alpe, right, I have a debt with no shtar to it, it is impossible to transfer ownership of that. And yet we have people who are writing harshas to collect their milveh alpet, right, to collect their oral loans. So if harsha involves a transfer of ownership, setting aside the problem of Rabbi Yochanan, how could you ever transfer ownership on any loan with no shtar? And we see that people are doing that. So the Baal Hamar is going to solve that nicely, because it turns out that harsha has no idea of ownership transfer at all. What's the Baal Hamar going to do with the Gemara in Shavuos? Right, which says you need to be mipi hatoveya. So probably what he'll say is that shlucho shalom kamoso should get juiced up. Right, that we should consider, right, when you have the question of shlucho shalom kimoso, so is it, you know, kimoso, or is it actually kimoso? So the Baal Hamar is going to have to say that we take the idea of shlichos really seriously. To the extent that a shliach is considered as if he is the litigant himself to be able to create a chi of carbon shva. Okay, so that's going to be kind of one pole in the sugya. Tosfos go, for the most part, in the same direction. Not quite as bold as the Baal Hamar, but they're like almost there. They start by asking the same question, right? They quote Rabbi Chananel as being curious, because he says, I look around nowadays and I see that everybody is writing harshas even on things that they shouldn't be able to do so. And he says, I have no idea why, right? Because after all, what did Neher Dai say at the beginning of our Gemara? So there were two versions of what Neher Dai said. Either they said, you can never, right, there's a fundamental problem, you can never do a harsha'a on portable objects. Or Neher Dai said, there's a technical problem, you can't do harsha'a on portable objects because it mechsi kashika, right? It looks like you're writing something that's not true when you have the owner write that he's giving this to the morsha, when this, he's not actually giving it to the morsha, right? It's actually in the possession of the borrower or the guy who has the pikadun or whatever. So when Chanal says, people, nonetheless, they're not concerned for mechsi kashika. They're writing harshas for everything, metaltalin, loans. So, you know, and he says, I don't know what's going on. So Rabbi Natan says, right, I'm going to explain to you why the people are doing what they're doing. Right, it's like a two-step chess move, and the result of that is going to be a checkmate on the limits to harsha. Right, number one, we're going to say that we paskin like... Well, it's really a three-step chess move. It's really a three-step chess move, right? Step number one is that what's going on here is shlichus, right? So you're not going to have any problems of transfer of ownership, because really what this is fundamentally this is shlichus. That's step one. Now, what does he do with Nehardai at the top of the Gemara? So the Baal HaMar said we cross off the whole top of the Gemara, but Rabbi Natan is not going to go that far, which is good, because the Gemara elsewhere is, you know, and brings in Nehardai, right? They bring in Nehardai in Shvuos and in Bechoros, so it's hard to totally wipe them off completely. But what does Rabbi Natan do? He says, well, first of all, we see elsewhere in the Gemara which version of Nehardai gets quoted in Shvuos and Bechoros. Not the first position, that there's a fundamental problem with writing Harsha on Metaltalin, but rather the second version of Nehardai, that there's only a technical problem of Mechsi Ke Shikra, right? That it looks like you're doing something not true. So we paskin, there's no fundamental problem with Harsha, there's only a technical problem Mechsi Ke Shikra. That's step, you know, that's step two. And step three is that if I look elsewhere in the Gemara, it turns out that we paskin that we do not worry about mechsi kashikra. We do not worry about doing things which look like they're not true. And Rabbi Natan's proof for this is this Gemara in Gittin and in Ksuvos. The case is a woman won in court, but there was a case of Nishma Benotel, right? That she makes a shvua and then she gets to take the money. So the guy that she's going up against says, you know, I don't trust her to take a shvua in this Bezdin, which is out on the road, because she'll have no problem lying. She doesn't know anybody in this community, so she'll lie, take the money, and run. I want her to have to come to her hometown and take the shvua there, so that she'll have the pressure of you know, having everybody in the community know that she's taking a shvua, which I'm claiming is false. So the woman says, okay, I have no problem doing that. I'm willing to not take the shvua here. I'll go to the hometown, take the shvua there. However, I demand of the Bezdin that we are currently in, write a document saying that I swore and I should get the money, FedEx that document to the hometown Bezdin, and when I go to the hometown Bezdin and I take the shvua, they will then give me that shtar. Right, so I'm willing to go back home, but I want you now to write a shtar saying that I swore and that I should get the money. So the Gemara says, well, you know, that's a problem of Mechsi Ke Shikra, because the Bezdin is writing up a document claiming that she swore and should get the money, but she hasn't taken the shvua yet, right? So that's Mechsi Ke Shikra. And then we paskin that we're okay with that. We're not going to be concerned for Mechsi Ke Shikra, and the Bezdin can go ahead and write the shtar. So, concludes Rabbeinu Tam, we see, la halacha, we're not concerned about Mechsi Ke Shikra. So, we see from the fact that Nehardai, that the second version of Nehardai is the only one that's ever quoted in the Gemara, that we reject Nehardai 1. And we see from the fact that we ignore Mechsi Ke Shikra, that we actually reject Nehardai 2, right? So we've cleared the path. There is no problem with Harsha'a for Metaldolin. And then you're going to ask me, okay, so, well, how can I, what about cases like a milva alpa, where I should never be able to transfer ownership, right? And the answer to that is going to be that this is shlichus, that not bailus. Okay, that's basically the position of Tosos, more or less in the camp of the Baal HaMar. The one other difference between them, where Tosos is not quite as bold, is that Tosos have a line where they say that even though this is shlichus, they made a takana for the shlichus as if there was a full kinyan. What? Not the very last line. It's like a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines up from the bottom.
The very last line by Tosos.
What?
Oh, wait, that's not.
Yeah, I
know. Oh, because of the bolded things.
All right, you have the bolded things in the middle of the.
Yeah.
Don't. Yeah. Okay, it's another discussion. Not as bad as the discussion before, but I don't like it so much. Right. So the point the Tosas are making here is that they're not willing to go along with the Baal HaMa'ar that we should juice up Shlucho Shel Adam Kamoso to the point that it would defeat the claim of Lav Baldvarim Didi'a. Right. Just because you're a shliach doesn't give you standing to fight the other, to fight the guy who's holding on to the money. But we made a takana for the shliach as if he made a full kenyan, right? So really, he's a shliach. We have a takana which allows him to have standing in the case, as if he had a kenyan. But there's no actual kenyan, right? So that's where you have a divergence between the Baal Amar and Tosvos. This is definitely shlichus. Is it pure shlichus, which is strong enough that it can overcome everything in its path? Or do we need to boost it with yetakana as if he's as if he was the owner? That's what Tosos have to say. But more or less, this is the camp that says that Harsha is shlichus. Okay. So the total opposite pole, that Harsha really is ownership, right? So that's going to be the position of the Rashba. It's really fascinating how they break down. So first of all, if we're going to say that Harsha is ownership, right? So then you'd expect the Rashba to stress the parts of the Gemara which imply ownership. And that's exactly what he does, right? Like the Rashba quotes Amemar's line about Tfisa as a proof, which is surprising because the Gemara explicitly says we don't paskin like Amemar, right? You cannot be Tofes. But the Rashba says, right, the fact that you have this position in the Gemara, right, that that already demonstrates, you know, we're not gonna fully argue with Amemar, right? All the time you have a rejected Shita, right? So is the Shita fundamentally rejected, or is the Shita only, you know, rejected in practice, but his Lamdas is still accepted? So the Rashba says, right, you know, Amemar's Lamdas is great. We just happen to not go that far because the way he puts it, the way his student puts it is a little more clear. You know, I'll hold off for 1 second on why exactly it doesn't work. Okay, now if you're going to tell me that Harsha is a transfer of ownership, right, and that now the guy is an owner, so the question that you're going to have to ask is what about Rabbi Yochanan, right? Why is there no problem here of, right, two people who, you have the thief, you have the owner, this person can't make it hektish because it's not his, and this person can't make the hektish because it's not in his possession, right? So this is, the object is not in his, it's not in the possession of the owner, so how can he transfer ownership? So for this, right, the Rashba has to make a big chiddush. And that is, right, what exactly did Rabbi Yochanan hold? So, did Rabbi Yochanan ever actually say in the Gemara that you can't sell an object after it's been stolen from you?
No, he was just talking about being
the Kaddish. Right. We have Hektish, we have Hefker, and we have Pidyon, right, which is just Hektish in reverse, right, take something out of Hektish. But he never actually said that you can't sell something. Now, I would have thought that that's either, you know, hu hadin, that's the exact same thing, or I'd have maybe thought like kal v'chomer, right? If I can't make something hektish, which all I need to do to make something hektish is just verbally declare it hektish, right? Amirasa le gvala kimisirasa le hedyo. I would have thought, for sure, I can't actually sell something, right, which requires a maisa kenyan. But what does the Rashba say? The Rashba has this huge breakthrough in Rabbi Yochanan, where he says that actually, if you think about it, if you take a step back, why should possession limit my ability to do kinyanim? Does the object belong to me? Yes, right? It's my object. I'm still the owner. So why should it be? Just because it's not in my possession that I can't buy it or sell it or transfer ownership. That doesn't really follow. If I'm the bailim, ownership means that I can you know, do these things with my object, and I still am the owner. Right, so rather, says the Rashba, that there's a chiddush, there's a gezeiras hakasif, right? The Torah said, ki yaktish ish es beiso, right? That you have to make your house hektish. Ma beiso bershu. So just like real estate is always in your physical possession, af kol bershu so, right? So too, anything else that you want to make hektish, it must be in your physical possession. Right, so says the Rashba, apparently, right, fundamentally, logically, you should be able to make kinyanim. There is a chiddush from the Gzeiras HaKasov that I cannot make it hektish unless it's in my physical possession. But what does that say about regular sale? Regular sale has nothing to do with the pasuk of ki yakdish ish hespesa, right? So you should be able to sell it. Just parenthetically, clearly, does the Rashba think that Rabbi Yochanan holds that there is a reduction of ownership? Right, we were asking, does Rabbi Yochanan tell me that the thief has impinged upon my ownership? So if I had to bet for the Rashba, probably not, right? Because if there was a reduction of ownership, then I wouldn't need a chiddush of Gzeir Sakasiv telling me there are things that I can't do, right? It would be very simple. I can't do it because I'm no longer the full owner. Rashba clearly thinks you are the full owner, just there are certain rights, there are things that you can't do to your stuff, which is 100% yours, when it's not in your possession. So since you can sell your stuff, certainly Rabbi Yochanan will not have any problem with doing a harsha. Right? That's the position of the Rashba. Now, where the Rashba gets in trouble is how is he going to explain the first position of Neher Dai? Because the first position of Neher Dai said, you may not do a harsha because of Rabbi Yochanan. Mm-hmm. So the second version of Neher Dai, that's wonderful, right? We have this huge chiddush that Rabbi Yochanan is okay with selling things, and therefore he's okay with transferring ownership, and your only problem will be that it's machzi kashikra. But the first position of Neher Dai, that there's a fundamental Rabbi Yochanan problem when you do a harsha, doesn't make any sense, because if I can sell it, shouldn't I be able to do a harsha? So what's the Rashba going to say about that? So he says something very strange, very very difficult to understand. He says, where is it? I'll try to find the source better for everybody. Okay, so it's in the paragraph, and the Rashba and the source quotes, starting with Bim Tomar. Right, so if you go to the third line in the paragraph where he says Va'afalpi,
yeah.
Okay, so read this a little slowly. So he says Va'afalpi she'efshar lemachra midirabanan. Even though you are able to sell it, right? Despite Rabbi Yochanan, you're still able to sell it because you Rabbi Yochanan has nothing to do with sale. Savri lishnakama. What is the first position that I think? Tekevan de'ina ella hakna'a gerua. Since this is a poor hakna'a when you make a harsha, shehamarsha yachal lahotzi miyad hamorsha. Right, because it's a poor kinyan. Since after all, it's not a full transfer of ownership to the morsha because the guy who's sending him is always able to take it back. V'afilu tafas, right? Even if the morsha seized it for himself, the guy who sent it can still take it back. Ukir of Ashi, in kosven alav harsha she'in kosven ela b'mesh sheherbu shuso mamish kipikadon velo kafre, right? So since the transfer and ownership of harsha is a poor transfer, it's still basically yours. Therefore, you can only do it when it's fully in your possession. You can only do this poor kinyan when it's only in your possession. A full transfer of ownership you can do even when it's not in your possession. A partial, poor kinyan, you can only do if it's fully in your possession.
Interesting. So then, Lishnapatra is like Mamash Kinyan. Well, obviously.
Yeah, Lishnapatra.
The way that he formulates it makes it like Vajola Magarita. Obviously, it's referring to only kinyan, to full kinyan.
Well, Lishna Basra says that just like Rabbi Yochanan, he's assuming for Rabbi Yochanan that you can sell stuff that's not in your possession. Says the Lishna Basra, just like you can sell it, so too you can do the ownership transfer of Harsha.
Yeah.
First answer says, even though I can do a full ownership transfer, even if it's not in my possession, a Hakna Gerua, a poor Kenyan, I can only do if it's in my possession. What do you think about that? If you had to bet, which of those two, right? Full kinyan, partial kinyan. One of these you can do if it's in your rishus, and one of these you can do even if it's not in your rishus. Which would you think?
You'd think that you do a full kinyan if it's in your rishus, and you're not full if it's not.
Exactly, right? The More straightforward, I would say, the more in charge I am, the more I can do, right? So if it's mine but not in my possession, then I can do the limited kinyan of harsha. If it's mine and it is in my possession, then I can do the full kinyan of sale, right? Somehow the Rashba says the exact opposite, right? That if you want to do the limited kinyan, then it has to be fully in your possession, not only in your ownership. So,
well, because he's explaining it the other way around. Not that you are going, not that when you have it in your possession, you're making the limited kinyan. Is that if you want to make the limited kinyan, then it has to be in your possession?
Yeah, but wouldn't you say the other way around?
Yeah.
What?
Limited possession, limited kinyan, full possession, full kinyan.
No, it depends how you're approaching it. Meaning, if you start with, if you're basing off, okay, it depends on what type of possession I have. So if I have full possession, I can only have a limited kinyan. Or if I have only partial possession, I can make a full kinyan. Or if you look at the other way around, that if you're making the limited kinyan, it at least has to be fully in your possession as you're doing it. If you're making a full kinyan, it can even not be in your possession.
Why, though? Why should...
Because you have to show some strength in it. Because for Hasha, in order for someone to give a valid Hasha, at least it has some connection with it, I assume.
But if I can fully... Right? I can make my phone yours, right? Here, he's got my phone. I can make this. You stole my phone. That was not nice, right? I can make it yours, right? Even though it's not in my possession, since I own my phone, I can make it yours. But I can't limitedly make it yours, so that you can then take these to the Bezdin and get my phone from me. Wouldn't I think the other way around? That it's easier to limitedly give it to you than to fully give it to you?
Well, does it make any sense for you to limitedly give it to me?
What do you mean?
Meaning, what does it mean to limitedly give it to
me? Okay, very good, right? So this is the exact problem that the Rashba and the Ramban are going to grapple with, which is if we're going to call this a kinyan, but it's obviously not a full kinyan, so what exactly is it, right? And the Rashba and the Ramban especially, are going to grapple for like paradigms we can use for what kind of kinyan this is. So, and that's going to be probably the solution for the Rashba. The solution the Rashba gives, somewhere in here, he compares it to, that was the next paragraph, in the paragraph of Lefi. He compares it to a shtar mavrechas, right? He quotes this Gemara in Ksuvos, at the mavrechas. Did you see it?
Yeah.
Okay, so you know what's going on there? It's a tricky case.
A woman wants to sort of like hide her possessions from her husband by giving them to her daughter, by
right.
like transferring the ownership sort of temporarily so that she'll ultimately get them back. But then the daughter doesn't want to give them back. The daughter gets married and divorced, and then the woman wants it back.
I think the woman...
Yeah.
Or the woman gets married and divorced.
Yeah.
Said to the daughter.
Right. So the woman.
We first saw the woman, and then.
And they said the daughter.
They said the daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not even sure. Right. I'm not making. That
yeah.
Up.
You're not making it up.
Or maybe it was Safaria that
didn't know. It's the scene.
Okay. I'm not sure it matters. Let's see.
We just pull it.
So we have a woman. She's an almana, right? We have a widowed woman who has a daughter from her previous marriage. And she has a nice estate. Excuse me. She wants to get remarried, right? But she also, if she gets remarried, then who's gonna become her yorish? New husband is gonna become the yorish, and she doesn't want that, right? She wants to reserve the assets for her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So what does she do? So she...
It makes more sense if the woman gets married.
Which
is
a study one?
Ion test. Yeah.
Because then that would explain like why she suddenly wants it back.
Exactly.
Because then it's free from her husband when she's divorced.
So she wants to give it... She wants to give her stuff to her daughter now. But she doesn't really want to give her stuff to her daughter now. She
mm-hmm.
just wants to prevent her new husband from getting a toehold in her assets. Which is a great way to start the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So she says, I'm giving you my stuff, but if I get divorced from husband number two, or I die, or he dies, or my husband dies, right, then the stuff goes back to me. In other words, right, upon dissolution of the marriage, I'll get my assets back from you.
Mm-hmm.
That means that if the woman dies first, well, the assets that were given to her daughter will remain with her daughter, and the husband can't inherit anything because it was the daughter the whole time. But if the marriage dissolves and the woman is still alive, then she's going to want her stuff back, and then she'll get it back. So that's called a shtar mavrechas, because she's trying to right, kind of escape her assets from her new husband. And it's a whole long story, but at the end of the day, we say that it works. Now, so the Rashba uses that. That's a great model, or potential model, to compare to Harsha. Because what you're doing here is you are transferring ownership. Right? Just like the mother is transferring ownership to her daughter, so too you are transferring ownership of your stuff to your agent. But in the event that something happens, it comes back to you. Mm-hmm. So in the event that the marriage dissolves, the assets go back to the mother. In the event that the Morsha is successful in obtaining the stuff, it will go back to the owner, the original owner, right? And therefore, the Morsha can't seize it for himself, because the whole way that the Kinyan was set up, it's yours until you actually obtain it, and then it's going to come to me, right? Just like mm-hmm. the mother says to her daughter, it's yours until I'm single, then it's going to come back to me as well. So, first of all, that's just the model he adopts for what Harsha is. Harsha is like a shtar mavrechas. In other words, it's like a kinyan with a built-in tanai. You wouldn't call this a condition. This is yours on condition that I am never single again. It's built in. It's internal into the kinyan. This is yours as long as X doesn't happen. Right, and that's what the Rashi thinks is going on with Harsha. This is yours, as long as X doesn't happen. So, what you're probably going to say for the Rashba, the reason why this kinyan needs Rashus is that this is a much more complex kinyan to pull off than just selling something. Right, mm-hmm. I'm selling, but I'm reserving. There are certain rights and conditions which are being internally attached into the kinyan. That's something that's much more difficult to pull off, actually, than just, here, take it. So what he's probably going to have to say is that if you want to do just a regular sale, you can do that without rishas. You just need to have legal ownership. But if you want to do this complex kinyan of harsha, that is going to require actual possession, just as Hakdash does, which was the chedesh of the pasuk. That's probably what I should have to say. It's still a little bit difficult, I admit, because it doesn't really work the language of Hakna Gerua. Hakna Gerua makes it sound like this is just less of a kinyan, as opposed to we're saying that it's a more complex kinyan. Otherwise, I don't know how to make any sense of it. So that's the other pull of the Rashba that what you have going on here really, really is transfer of ownership, right? He emphasizes all the other parts of Gemara. He celebrates Amemar. He even celebrates when the Gemara says, right, the Gemara wasn't sure for Ravashi, right? Shlicha Shavye or Shutva Shavye, right? So we paskin Shlicha Shavye, but the Rashba says, look, right, Harsha is such a bialist that the Gemara even thought that it might be Shutva Shavye, right? So, the Balmar is going to say, very nice, but it didn't, right? But the Rashba is going to highlight everything except the maskana, and the Balmar is going to highlight the maskana and ignore everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to say, when the Gemara said shlicha shavi, it just meant that he's like a shliach in that he's not able to keep it for himself, since that was part of the arrangement that you made with him. Okay, fine. So that's our other poll. Now, what about the Ramban? Right. So just total separate parenthetical mark. It's really interesting. Who's the Rashba's main Rebbe? Do you guys know?
Rashba, I don't know.
It's a trick question.
Ramban.
Yeah, so everyone knows that the Rashba is a student of the Ramban.
Yeah.
Right? His main Rebbe is actually the Ramban's first cousin.
Oh.
Rabbeinu Yonah.
Okay.
But it's funny because everyone thinks, right, oh, we have the Rambam, the
That's
Rashba.
That's Jewish history.
Yeah,
yeah,
Rambam,
like,
Rashba, Ritva, right? The classic three. But really, it's Rabbeinu Yonah to the Rashba, and it's the Rambam to the Ra'ah, to the Ritva. Those are the...
So the Rashba wasn't there, just there.
The Rashba's main Rebbe is Rabbeinu Yonah, and his secondary Rebbe is the Ramban. The Ritva's main Rebbe, who he calls, you know, Rebbe Muvhak, is the Ra'ah, and his secondary Rebbe is the Rashba. Which I find fascinating because if you learn Yordaya or Nida and ever learn Torah Sabayas, right, which is probably the most important halacha sefer written until the Shachnar, by the Rashba, and then the Ra'ah writes his attacks on it, and then the Rashba writes probably my favorite sefer among Rishonim, which is the Mishmeres Abayis, which he wrote as an anonymous defense of the Halaga Machaber of the Torah Abayis, and anonymously attacks the Dedek Abayis for attacking himself. But the two of them clearly did not get along. But the Ritva somehow is a student of both of them, which is interesting. But anyway. So the Rashba is a student of the Ramban, but it's clear that he doesn't have the Sefer of the Mochamos. Somehow, for sure in Bava Kamma, I don't know anywhere else, but it's like, it's as if, you learn the Rashba, it's as if the Mochamos doesn't exist. So just to know. But anyway, what does the Ramban do in the Mochamos? So, right, the answer is he makes Rav Chaim very proud. Because, right, what does he say? Is Harsha Shlichas or is Harsha Bailas? What's Ramban's answer?
It's Shlichut with Matana. Wait, who are you talking about right now?
Ramban.
Oh, never mind. Yeah.
Which one? Shlichas or Bailas? Ownership or agency?
Oh.
You didn't read this one? Oh,
no.
This one.
At the end...
It's also a trick question.
It's both.
It is both, but it's not sort of both.
Yeah.
He says, right, he quotes... this is a line from the Gemara about Matna Shchiv Meira. But he says... What?
We just understood it as mainly Shchiv with, like, other aspects to it.
Yeah, so, right, how to weigh it, exactly. How to weigh it is a great question. But he has a line there where he says, right, Atrei Rikshi Rachiv, right? It's literally riding on both tracks, right? Atrei Rikshi Rachiv. It is riding on the ownership track,
uh-huh.
And it is riding on the Shlichas track, right? So he thinks that actually, you know, why does it seem sometimes like it's one and sometimes it seems like the other? It's because you need to have both. Why do you need to have both? Why do you need to have both? Yeah, why do you need to have both?
What does it mean to have both?
Because if you just have Shlichus on its own, then...
With just Shlichus, you can't force the person to give it to you.
Exactly, right? Shlichus does not solve the problem of lav bal dvarim ditiyat. If you want legal standing, you cannot be a shliach. Right? The Baal Hamara's idea that Shlichus shon kamoso is enough, the Ramban rejects that. By the way, he's not the only one. I didn't quote this, but in some of the Chachmei Ashkenaz, they ask Akasha, they ask, I don't understand. You clearly need Kenyan, but why? Why isn't Shlucho Shon Kamoso enough to get around Lav Bal Dvar Midiya? Right? So there is this position out there that Shlichus does get you standing. Right? The Ramban rejects that. Ramban says, exactly. Right? We need to... Shlichus is not enough to give me lav bal dvarim didia.
Mm-hmm.
Why do I need shlichus though?
Because if you're not, I can just read it straight out from it, but if you're not, kenshin za'udu v'nidam v'nidam t'shliachu, t'i lav shtifachu t'shalye, if you come here, have you eno yakul have no klav? Because if you're eno yakul hakfish.
Meaning what?
Okay, I'm probably get that, but you wouldn't really be able to corner it because I can't be market share. It could be gonna,
right, that line means that you have a Rabbi Yochanan problem, which is going to have to explain, right? If there is ownership, how do I get around the Ryokanon problem? But what does Shlichus actually provide for me? What does Shlichus actually provide for me? All right, so first of all, let's take a step back before we get into that. Okay, so there has to be a transfer of ownership. What about Rabbi Yochanan? How can there be a transfer of ownership? Doesn't Rabbi Yochanan give you a problem for that? So says the Ramban, that's the machlokes between the first position of Naradai and the second position of Naradai. First position of Naradai says, yeah, and the we were wondering in the Rashba, right, that the Rashba seemed to be backwards, because the Rashba says that it's easier to do a sale than to do a Kenyan Harsha. And we thought it should be the opposite. It should be easier to do a Kenyan Harsha than to do a sale. That's the exact position of the Ramban. The Ramban assumes, Rabbi Yochanan says you can't sell your stolen objects. If it's on your Rashas, you can't sell it. And the Rashba is big Chiddush, but that's not the case. The Ramban rejects. You can't sell it. Can you do the lesser Kenyan of Harsha? So the first position of Naradai is no. Just like you can't sell it, you can't do Harsha. Second position is yes. You can't sell it, but you can do the limited ownership transfer of Harsha. Right? So that's going to take care of whether you can or cannot do this Kenyan. Because I have to explain what this Kenyan is. But that sets aside the problem of can you do it or can you not. But once you can do the Kenyan, why do I need the Shlichus? So what does he say about that? Yeah, okay. So what he's going to say here, this is the line in here of, you have it open, you can do a control F for it. Mm-hmm. Starting with Ve'ein Hala Yachol Liton Alav.
Oh, I remember that. Is that in the last?
This is in the long paragraph of Farish Pashta. Towards the beginning-ish of it.
Sorry, can you say the line one more time?
Ve'ein Hala Yachol.
Yeah, I found this. Four lines down on the source page. Great. On the last page of the source sheet.
Okay. He's going to read it?
Ve'en hala yachol liton alav, kevan shelo kanita ota, lo atem lecha. Sharei habalim amru lo letov'o, v'shlucham hu, hilchach yahi blei nihalei bal karche. The kol shekin mitaltele de pikadon shekivat sheknaam kinyan gamor afilu b'lo shlichut ba'alim yachol adunimo lehotziam yado bal karcha.
Right, good. So there are two problems here. There's a limited kinyan, right? There's a kinyan, but it's not a full kinyan, right? That's why Rabbi Yochanan is going to be okay with this. So if there's not a full kinyan, you may be an owner, but you're not the owner. So what you have here is a concept called zchuse gvia, the right to collect, right? Not all. So if you're the owner of the object, then you lend it out. So you can collect it because you have what's called zchuse gvia, right? Part of ownership means that you have the right to collect it. If I lent something to someone, and now I give some ownership to the Morsha, did I also give him Zechuse Gvia or not? Did I give him the right to collect? Okay, you're an owner, right? But it's, you know, like Mitt Romney is in negotiations to become 1% owner of the New York Yankees, right? So, okay, so he's an owner, but you're not the owner, right? You have limited rights. So if you're a limited owner, does that give you the right to collect objects from the borrower? So the Ramban is assuming, yeah, you have to draw it out, and it's easier if you saw the Rishonim, but we didn't have time to do that. But what the Ramban is arguing here is that limited ownership, in a Hanami, it's enough for you to have legal standing in court. He can't tell you, lav bal dvar didiya, But who says that you have the right to take the object from him? You don't. That's why you need to have the agency. I am the shliach of the owner who has the chosei gvia, right? So, in other words, there are two problems that the Morsha faces in court. Number one, he has to get into the room in the first place, right? And in order to get a seat at the table, he has to be an owner. Number two, not only does he have to have a seat at the table, he has to be able to collect the object. And in order to do that, he has to say, well, you know, I'm here as an owner, and I have the right to collect from you because I am representing the owner who has the zechus egeviyah. So that is what shlichus is going to accomplish for me. Now, what, right, at least the second part of what you read, when he says if it's a pikadon, right, metaltele de pikadon, so there you can have a full transfer of ownership, right? Because pikadon, we say, is always, right, even though it's not in your physical possession, it's considered as if it's in your physical possession because we consider the shomer to be the embassy of the mafkin, right? So that's the one exception, right? For most Rishonim, if I make something a pikadon, I still can do sales with it because it's as if it's in my possession. So pikadon, you can make your morsha a full violin. A stolen object or a lent object, you can make him a partial violin, enough to give him a seat at the table, and then you make him your shliach so that he has the right to collect as well. Okay. Now, the last thing to... to wrap up. The one question the Rabban is going to have to explain is what exactly is the ownership structure here? Right. Now, what's limiting making the Morsha a full owner are two things. Number one, the fact that according to the Ramban, we have a Rabbi Yochanan problem. Right? The Rashba didn't have a Rabbi Yochanan problem, but the Ramban does. And the second problem that the Ramban has in fully making him an owner, the Rashba also had. And that was, how come if he's a full owner, he should be able to seize the object for himself? Right? So how come he... If we say he can't, why? How can he be an owner, but not be an owner with the rights to do tefisa? That's what the Ramban's going to have to juggle. So he gives three models for this. You can tell it's a classic. The Ramban is like struggling to pin it down, so he throws out, I think, three different suggestions. Where does it start in here? Let's just read the part, starting with Rav Ashi Palig. Rav Ashi Palig Ad Amemar. I only sent you this one paragraph, right?
Rav Ashi Palig
Ad Amemar. Right, so Amemar said that you can do tfisa, right, that the Morsha can seize it for himself. So he's going to allow this to be more of an owner. What's Rav Ashi going to say? How can we juggle him being an owner with him not being able to keep it for himself? If he's an owner, he will keep it for himself. So what does he say? So let's see. So Rav Ashi palagad amimar, right? So Rav Ashi argues with amimar. V'yamar, ho'il v'kasav le'i kol d'mis'anis mendina alai, right? Since he wrote in the Shtar Harsha, right, anything that the Bezdin says to you, I'll accept. Shehu lashon shlichas, right? The Gemara said that line is in there to say that you are only my agent, right? The owner is still involved. I am accepting whatever verdict you obtain from the Bezdin, right? So that implies that we're dealing with the shliach here. So afilu l'divrei nehardai. Shlichas shavi legam. Right, he is a full shliach, even according to Nardai. Right, this is rejecting Balamar, because Balamar thought that Nardai thought he's a full owner, and therefore Balamar rejected Nardai. Right, the Ramban says, no, everyone is assuming that there is shlichus in the mix. V'lo kasav l'nafshach, right, now when, why did he say, zil dun v'zachi v'apik l'nafshach, go and take it for yourself? So he didn't mean it's fully yours. Ela ke'omer l'shlucho, hotzi li ma'os miyad ploni shemedina sayam, go get my money from so-and-so who's across the ocean. V'eshtamesh b'ham l'nafshach, v'tachziram li b'kan. And you can use them for yourself, and then return them to me, right? So I'm not giving them to you. When I said zil dun v'zachi v'apalifik l'nafshach, I wasn't giving them to you, like the Rashba said. I'm giving you the rights to use them, but then you're going to have to give them back to me. V'hu kikavei alo behen schar b'shlichuso. It's as if he's giving him a reward for his shlichus, right? You'll be my shliach, and I will pay you for doing so by giving you the rights to use the stuff in the interim after you get it. Behilkach bal dvarim didihu, right? That transfer of ownership, not full owner, rights to use it, right? I will have the rights to use it. So having the rights to use it, that is enough to give him a seat at the table, right? That makes him a bal dvarim. Umigo de mishtai ledina lahu igra mishtai dina akarna. Since he has a seat at the table because he has rights to use of the object until it goes back, then he can adjudicate on the actual principle itself. He doesn't own the principle; he owns the rights to use the principle. But says Ramban, that's enough to make you to give you a seat at the table. I have an ownership element in this object. I don't actually own it; I own the rights to use it in the interim. But that's enough. Right? That's the first. That's the Ramban's first model. What does it mean? You're a partial owner. I'm an owner on the right to use the object. Pidamin hacha bepalga. Not sure what that means. Uchtamin inyan bal benichse ishta. Right. So here's the model of the husband with his wife's property. Dehecha de isle peira beare lo ba'i harsha. Right. If you so if a woman brings property to the marriage. Right, so the woman retains the ownership of the principal. The husband has the right to the payros. Right, the husband has the right to whatever income is generated off the property during the marriage. So if the husband wants to go and sue somebody, right, let's say the wife brought a cow into the marriage. Right, so the wife has the rights to the cow. The husband gets the rights to the milk. And then someone steals the cow. Right, so does the husband need his wife to give him a harsha to go sue for the cow back? No, right? Since he owns the peiros, that gives him a seat at the table, and now he can himself go and sue to get back his wife's cow, right? So too, right? That's the model he's developing. Ownership over peiros, even though I don't have ownership over principle, and that's sufficient to do harsha. Model number one, baal b'nechseyesh. The kol dekein, right? And if the husband can do that, then for sure this guy. Why is it a kol shekein? Because the husband has no rights to the cow proper. He only has rights to the milk that's coming out of the cow. Whereas this guy, the morsha, can use the object itself until he has to give it back to the true owner. Okay, model number one. Model number two. O shehu kamo matana amanas lahafsir. Right? That's another model for ownership, but intrinsically limited ownership, right? Where it's yours, but you got to give it back to me, right? Mm-hmm. Can you do kiddushin with the matan on the hachzir?
No.
You can. No.
We try to handle that.
Can't you?
I don't know.
I think so. I thought it was compared to.
You can. Okay, let's for post-game research. But the bottom line is that matanas haachzir is considered a matana. Lulav, right? There's the case where all the tanam are on the boat, right? And Rabban Gamliel is the only one with lulav, right? And because he's a nasi, so he has the lulav, and so he gives it to all the other tanam, right? Matana amanas haachzir. So matanas haachzir is considered a matana. So maybe that's the model here, right? It's given to the Morsha. Why can't he keep it? Because it was Matana was the Hatsir. That's model number two that the Ramban presents for limited ownership. And now model number three, maybe the most interesting of them. I'm not sure if we talked about this on the year. But do we talk about Kani Amanas Tachnos this year yet?
Mm-mm.
No? Okay, so that's model number three, and it's the most interesting one. It's a case in Nedarim, right? So somebody... Reuven doesn't like Shimon, right? So Reuven doesn't like Shimon. You have a father who hates his son, right? So the father disowns his son, and the father says, right, I'm making a neder that his son can never get any benefit from his stuff. Okay? Sad, but it happens. Turns out that his grandson is like the star in Yeshiva. Right, his grandson's like the best Jew of all time. So they tell the grandfather, you know, by disowning your son, you have prevented your grandson from collecting all your stuff, right? And your grandson could have sat in kol his whole life if he inherited you, but now he's going to have to go work for a living because you disowned your son, right? So grandfather says, well, that's terrible. I just want to mess over my son. I didn't want to mess over my grandson, so what can I do? So the Gemara asks, what if he says, Kini almanas lahaknos. I am acquiring it to my son, which he can't do because there's a neder against his son, on condition that it then turns around and goes to the grandson. Right? So it's like a bank shot, right? I'm just shooting it off my son for the purposes of it going to grandson. On the one hand, I'm never making the kinyan with intent for the son to hold on to it. On the other hand, it has to be in the possession of the son for the grandson to get it from him, right? So can that work? And the Gemara says that it can, right? Kani amanas lo almanas lahaknos works, right? Which means that it really is the son's, but only for the purposes of passing it on. So the third model that the Ramban presents is maybe we can invoke kani amanas lahaknos. It really goes to the Morsha, but only for the purposes of it bouncing off of him and into the possession of the guy who sent it. So he is a real owner, and that's going to allow him to sue in court, gives him a seat at the table, but it's not going to allow him to keep it, because built into the original kinyan, right, was the fact that you're not actually keeping this to keep it, you're just getting this to serve as a backward. And he quotes this position in the Gaonim, that in fact, the question of whether the Morsha is a Shliach or a Shutef depends on whether Kani Amanas Lahaknos is viable or not. If you say that Kani Amanas Lahaknos does not work, so then it's not enough to make him a Shliach, you're going to have to make him a partner, right? He's going to have actual 50% stake in the object itself, right? Whereas the position that thinks that Harsha is a Shliach is going to say... is going to say that this is actually a kinyan amanas lahaknos. It is a kinyan for the purposes of it going on to the other, to the true owner, and that's the Ramban's third bottle, right? So, at the end of the day, the Ramban says you need to have ownership to get a seat at the table. You have to have shlichas to have the zechusei gviyat deal to actually collect it. What kind of ownership is this? So, Rabbi Yochanan says you can't do a full sale, and that's why the first Nardai throws out Harsha. The second Nardai says, well, this is a limited transfer, and therefore you can do it. What limited transfer is it that allows you to have a seat at the table but doesn't allow you to keep it for yourself? So the Ramban's three versions are either kinyan peiros, right, like the husband with his wife's property. Number two is matana al-sahakzir, and number three was kinyan al-sahaknos, right, the kinyan where you're just serving as the backboard to bank it to the real owner. Okay, fine. We should probably stop here. I feel like we should probably just move on.